We're here in the Lateran University, and you can hear the echoes of conference activity going on. You're here for a conference, but you're also here for another reason, and that is you are the joint recipient of the 2013 Joseph Ratzinger Prize. Tell me, was it a surprise for you when that was announced?
Very much a surprise. About a year ago, I agreed to participate in the conference and give one of the opening papers, following a previous conference in Barcelona on the 20th anniversary of my original doctoral work. So I just thought I was coming to the conference. And then we got a letter, actually on my birthday in June, from the Apostolic Nuncio asking me if I would accept the honour. And everybody thought this was a practical joke from the students. So, but it was such a joy to discover that, and a real surprise and a terrific honour.
You are the first non-Catholic to win the prize as well. Your feelings about that?
Clearly, very, very honoured, delighted, excited. But also I think it says something about the importance of what has been happening over the last two or three decades, not just in Anglican and Roman Catholic dialogue, but internationally in biblical studies, as we have been working more and more closely together. And partly that is a result of the very important statement in Vatican II, Dei Verbum, at which the young Joseph Ratzinger was a consultant. And in 1968, he wrote the commentary on Dei Verbum, which really in many ways opened the door for critical study within Catholics and ongoing dialogue. And so in the international field now, we are working very closely together.
Talk to me about your paper that you've been working on. Talk to me about, you know, winning the prize and the work that you've been doing, quietly doing. People win prizes, you hear about it, but they're always busy doing their work in the background.
The prize is given for the fact that I, as they put it, established the indissoluble connection between Jesus and the Gospels. Now, that may sound like what Peter Cook used to call the art of the bleeding obvious, but actually in New Testament scholarship for most of the 20th century, the real subject of the Gospels was thought to be the early Christian teaching and preaching, particularly in German scholarship. And it is against that Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Benedict Emeritus, in his Life of Jesus, is reacting against that very strong German trend. I'm a classicist originally. I taught Latin and Greek, and I'm a specialist in literary theory. And I, in my PhD, did a comparison of the Gospels with Greco-Roman biography, including going right down to counting all the verbs in the Greek text by hand and drawing lots of very funny graphs and pie charts to demonstrate how Jesus is the subject.
Many people have commented on the beauty of the writings of Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI. What do you draw from his writings?
Reading Pope Benedict's account of Jesus was very eerie for me. When I was reading the foreword, I found him saying things that I have said in my writings, my teaching, my lectures for many years about what he calls the Christological hermeneutic, or to put it in more simple terms, the fact that the person of Jesus of Nazareth is the key to understanding not just the Gospels, but the rest of the New Testament, and indeed the whole of the Bible. And in particular, coming out of the statement from Vatican II on the Word of God, Dei Verbum, which talks a lot about the deeds and words of Jesus, I found that the Holy Father's approach and what I was trying to argue for were very similar indeed. We may debate and disagree about the results of that, and we will do tomorrow, and he invites that dialogue at the front of his book. But we are united on the search for Jesus as the way of understanding the Gospels.
Before I step away from that, I just wanted to ask you about, you were talking about Jesus of Nazareth and his other writings, but Jesus of Nazareth, how much do you think that is going to be a reference point for future generations?
I think it's a really important statement to have clearly a very gifted and talented academic theologian who then becomes the Pope, making a statement that we should be using all of our God-given faculties to understand what we're doing, but also to do that in a prayerful kind of way. I have a poster on my office wall that says, Jesus died to take away your sins, not your mind. And it's really important that we should have had such a clear direction. In terms of its importance for future generations, that I think is the overriding importance. in terms of his account of Jesus of Nazareth, it's clear that the first volume, which was written mostly before he became pope, is in strong dialogue, particularly with German scholarship. And he blends together both the scholarship and the devotional. The second and third volumes, written while he was pope, are more theological and more spiritual.
What have the highlights of this conference been for you?
The highlights of this conference have been, apart from the sheer honour of being in the Vatican, staying in the same guest house with Pope Francis, seeing him at breakfast every morning, finding Swiss guards saluting at me, has been the chance to hear the papers from some very old friends from around the world and other people whose work I have admired but I have never had the privilege to meet. So the range of papers have been very interesting, being targeted specifically on this question of Joseph Ratzinger's approach to Jesus of Nazareth.
Do you ever think yourself, if Jesus had written down things himself, what it would be like? His own gospel?
The question came up in the discussion there about why hadn't Jesus written itself. Of course, the only time where there's a mention of Jesus writing in the Gospels is when he writes in the sand, when they bring the woman taken in adultery. And there's a lot of speculation about what was he writing in the sand. Maybe the sins of the other people who wanted to throw the stone or do not bear false witness. I think what's very exciting for me about the fact that he doesn't write a single gospel is that, I mean, God takes the, you know, is incarnate among us as an ordinary human being. I'm clear that as a carpenter or a technician as he was, or as his colleagues were fishermen, like anybody here in the Mediterranean, they could buy and sell in three or four different languages, Aramaic, Greek, Latin, so on. But what is exciting is that we have four portraits of Jesus in the four Gospels. God is much more interesting than Henry Ford, who said you can have any color you like as long as it's black. If we just had Jesus, the authorized biography, there would only be one way to understand. This way, we have a prism, we have colors that invites us to see how the gospel is according to Matthew, according to Mark, according to Luke, according to John. We have their versions of it, and we're invited to join in and work out what Jesus means for us and for our culture and our life today in the here and now.
When you read, every time you pick up a Bible and you read the Gospels, is there something new you find in it every time? And why do the Gospels just continue to fascinate?
I'd love to say it was every time, but maybe not every time. The great English translator J.B. Phillips described the work of a biblical scholar as being like an electrician rewiring an old house without being able to turn the power off. And every now and again you touch something that looks dry and dusty and dead and you get a shock because it's live. And for me, the joy of working on the scriptures academically is every now and again I touch something I think is dry and dead and I get a shock and it's live. But obviously, of course, I just don't read them in my study. I also read them in my chapel, in my place of prayer, when I go away on retreat, and constantly asking God to speak to me again through the scriptures.
Is that the interesting thing about having the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that each one offers a different facet of Jesus' life?
It was very much part of the paper I was giving here at the conference, was to look at the different four facets of Jesus' life, the way in which the Jesus in Mark's Gospel is traditionally seen in terms of a lion. There's conflict, it's dark and riddling and enigmatic and difficult to understand. Matthew's picture over the hall here is of a human face. He explains he's the teacher of Israel, and it's very Jewish. Luke's account is the ox, the burden-bearing person who cares for the poor, for the women, for the non-Jews, and who is sacrificed. And John, of course, is traditionally seen as the high-flying, all-seeing, divine eagle who comes from God and dwells among us and returns to God in glory. And those simple images that go right back to the early church and are particularly there in Celtic art in Ireland and in North England, the Book of Kells, the Book of Lindisfarne, have these four images. And they were a fantastic visual image in the Celtic church and they are for us in a new visual culture today.
Can Christians sometimes get bogged down in too much theology? In that, when I say that, I mean that you talked earlier about Jesus being a carpenter, about him living a simple life, then the fishermen, the apostles. Can we get bogged down and not see maybe right to the heart of the message, or is that being too simplistic?
It's always a constant temptation to get bogged down in too much of the detail. And it's important that we do the detail as an academic. But I also have to say, no, Lord, teach me. And in one sense, I spent the first 15 years of my work working on the Gospels, for which they've wanted me here, as trying to show they're about Jesus as a person. And the last 15 years working on how the narrative reflects the teaching, i.e. what Jesus did is as important as what Jesus says. And it's those simple things that are actually at the end the most important.
Apart from the prize-giving ceremony on Saturday, there's going to be an event at the Anglican Centre here in Rome. Tell me about your connection to the Anglican Centre and what this event will be like on Sunday.
I was very involved with the Lambeth Conference of Anglican Bishops Worldwide in 2008, where the then Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, chose my commentary on John's Gospel as the pre-conference reading for all the bishops in the world, sent it to them for Christmas to read before they came, and then I was helping to lead the Bible studies there. And since then, I've been involved with a large international project on the Bible in the life of the church, which is being driven by Archbishop David Moxon, who was then Archbishop of New Zealand, who is now the representative of the Archbishop of Canterbury here in Rome, running the Anglican Centre. And Archbishop David has kindly invited me to do a lunchtime presentation on Sunday, to which we've invited representatives from the Lateran, Pontifical, Gregorian universities, again so we can explore together as Anglicans and as Roman Catholics something about the importance of reading the Bible together. And for me, it's very important that we have Archbishop David here representing the Archbishop of Canterbury, and that we continue this dialogue. Clearly, it used to be very strong between Archbishop Rowan and Pope Benedict Joseph Ratzinger. They knew each other when they were theological students. And I'm honored to be following in that tradition.